Monster Man, episode 165. Cat and Cat Lord.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we are finally starting the C chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. But before we do that, it's time to thank a Patreon backer. This is not a new Patreon backer, but someone who has increased their pledge level. So thank you very much, Dave Noonan. If you would like to pledge to support the show, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and kick in as little as $1 a month to support the show. And depending on your pledge level, you'll get access to lots of bonus content. And I am just about to record some new BOCO for the $1 level subscribers. Well, for everybody. Every level gets all the levels below. At $2, you'll get access to my other show, Patron Deities, and at the $5 or higher level, you'll get the ability to choose a special episode about a monster of your choice. Anyway, thank you very much. Your continued support is greatly appreciated. Also, time to read some listener mail. I got a lot of really good responses to the last episode, which included the bowler and the pecan, and I was particularly pleased with an excerpt from an article that Steve Dempsey posted on the Patreon site, and I'm just going to read it because I think it's a lot of fun. This is from a collection of what are called the Denham Tracts, pamphlets printed by a folklorist named Michael Denham. They were later reprinted by the Folklore Society. So in this section, Denham is talking about the superstition that spirits will not appear on Christmas Eve, which is, of course, most famously mentioned in Hamlet. But then he goes on to say, "What a happiness this must have been 70 or 80 years ago and upwards to those chosen few who had the good luck to be born on the eve of this festival of all festivals, when the whole earth was so overrun with ghosts, boggles, bloody bones, spirits, demons, ignis fatui, brownies, bugbears, black dogs, specters, shellycoats, scarecrows, witches, wizards, barguests, Robin Goodfellows, hags, nightbats, scrags, breaknecks, phantasms, hobgoblins, hobblards, boggy bows, dobbies, hobthrusts, fetches, kelpies, warlocks, mockbeggars, mumpokers, jemmy birdies, urchins, satyrs, pans, fauns, sirens, tritons, centaurs, calcars, nymphs, imps, incubuses, spoorns, men in the oak, hellwains, firedrakes, kitty canes, dicks, tom tumblers, melch dicks, lars, kitty witches, hobby lanterns, dicka Tuesdays, elf fires, jillburnt tails, knockers, elves, rawheads, meg with the wad, old shocks, oofs, padfoots, pixies, pictrees, giants, dwarfs, tompokers, tutgots, snapdragons, sprats, spunks, conjurers, thurses, spurns, tentarabobs, swathes, tints, toddlaries, jack-in-the-wads, mormos, changelings, redcaps, yathhounds, colt pixies, tom thumb, black bugs, boggarts, scarbugs, shagfuls, hodgepodgers, hobthrushes, bugs, bull beggars, bygorns, balls, caddies, bowmen, brags, wraiths, wafts, flayboggarts, fiends, galleytrots, imps, guytrashes, patches, hobbin-lanterns, gringes, boguests, bonelesses, peg-paddlers, pucks, face, kidnappers, galley-beggars, hudskins, knickers, madcaps, trolls, robinets, friar's lanterns, silkies, cold lads, death horses, goblins, hob-headlesses, bugaboes, cows or cows, nickies, knacks, necks, wathes, miffies, buckles, ghouls, sylphs, guests, swarths, frithes, frights, guy carlins, pygmies, clitterfaces, nixies, ginny burnt tails, dutmen, hellhounds, doppelgangers, bogleposts, bogies, redmen, pork dunes, grants, hobbits, hobgoblins, brown men, cowies, dunnies, werecows, allholds, mannequins, follets, corids, lubricans, clerkins, kobolds, leprechauns, cores, mares, corids, puckles, corgans, sylvans, succubuses, black men, shadows, banshees, lean hanshees, clabbernappers, gabriel hounds, malkins, doubles, corpse lights or candles, scrats, mahoons, trows, gnomes, sprites, fates, fiends, sibyls, nevins, white women, fairies, thrummy caps, cuddies, and nisses. And apparitions of every shape, make, form, fashion, kind, and description, that there was not a village in England that had not its own peculiar ghost. Nay, every lone tenement, castle, or mansion house which could boast of any antiquity had its bogle, its spectre, or its knocker. The churches, churchyards, and crossroads were all haunted. Every green lane had its boulder stone on which an apparition kept watch at night. Every common had its circle of fairies belonging to it, and there was scarcely a shepherd to be met with who had not seen a spirit." I'm actually kind of surprised by the number of items on that list that we've covered on this podcast that have Dungeons & Dragons equivalents, even though we did say Hobgoblin twice. Anyway, I thought that was such a fun list that I couldn't go without attempting to do as much of it as I could in one go. So Steve, thank you very much for bringing that to my attention. All right, let us now take a look at the cat and the cat lord in Dungeons & Dragons. Now, first up, I feel like the cat needs no introduction because it is a cat.
You got your domestic cat, and then you got your wild cat. I mentioned before that there is something more undignified and horrifying about being killed by dogs than being killed by wolves. And there's something even more horrifying and undignified about being killed by cats than being killed by dogs, but it is also much less likely. We're talking about little chaps that do 1d2 damage with their claws. You know, these are not the sluggers of the animal kingdom. Who's going to fight a bunch of cats? I mean, fighting a bunch of cats actually would be a pretty good low-level encounter where you go up against, you know, some wizard, and he's just got a lot of cats. He loves cats, but he's got whatever necessary magical connection to them that he can sick them on you while he's trying to escape out the back window with the blue jewel. And then you have to fight all these cats, and you're stumbling around the wizard's library, knocking over tables full of magical items and falling down under showers of paper. And it's just a nuisance. You're like, you little cats, get off me. And you know, if they continually roll a bunch of twos at low levels, in the old days, you could get a hurt, although the chances that they're going to get through your arm are pretty slim, but you never know. So cats are fine. Cats are great. I love cats. I don't have a cat, but I have a cat that just likes to come and stay in my house, even though it's not technically my cat. And she's adorable, but I don't think she's going to play an important role in a Dungeons & Dragons game. Although, you know, the horror of dealing with dogs is that we trust dogs. So if you're fighting dogs, something has gone terribly wrong. Whereas if your cat tries to kill you, I feel like there's an undertone of, I always knew it would come to this. You know, we had a good run of putting our mutual suspicion aside so that you could get belly rubs. But eventually, I knew it would come down to you and me, cat. So I think there's fun to be had in, you know, a D&D encounter with a cat, even though it's probably not a very serious challenge. Following the cat, we have the Cat Lord. Now, speaking of serious challenges, this bad boy is, for starters, AC-9, not even to mention his incredibly robust suite of different abilities, all kind of roughly themed around the abilities of cats, including the ability to lick his own wounds 9 times a day and heal them up a bit, although he doesn't have 9 lives, which feels like an oversight. And furthermore, the ability to summon all kinds of cats, including anywhere from 30 to 50 domestic cats, but also things like tigers and lions and werecats. The illustration of this character is of a darkly handsome fella sort of prowling around. He's wearing a kind of, I know it's not actually a Nehru jacket, but it's got a certain Nehru jacket-like look to it, which makes me think of him as kind of a 60s, maybe like a cult leader, or a rock star stroke cult leader, maybe kind of a Jim Morrison sort of character. He perfectly makes sense as the sort of person that the king, you know, if the king of the cats had to appear in human form, this is the human form in which he would appear. I like the idea that there's a king of the cats. It ties into the fairy tale story about hearing that, seeing a cat funeral, hearing that the king of the cats has died, and then your cat saying, then I am the king of the cats, and vanishing up the chimney. That's a fun image, and I like the idea that this is, you know, the king of the cats. He has abilities like a rogue, which is the class that cats would be, certainly, but also like a monk, which is fine. I mean, if he's got to fight people, he's got to fight them like a monk. So this is all well and good. If you decided that what you wanted was a superhero whose origin story was that he was the king of the cats, raised among cat people, and now he had come to human society to either fight or commit crimes, the Cat Lord in the Monster Manual 2 provides you with an excellent mechanical framework for making that happen. But how do you actually use this guy in a Dungeons & Dragons game? Because I think, maybe I'm just generalizing from my experience, I, and maybe other players too, but I would find this guy as an NPC infuriating. Unless you're very high level, he's well above the level that you can take on. So the DM is introducing into this game this character who's faster and smarter and quicker witted and better dressed and better looking than you are. To do what? If he's an antagonist, then that's kind of boring, because in general, when you're going up against a villain, what you want to do is overcome that villain's raw power or legions of followers with your own smarts, guts, and resourcefulness. Going up against a nimble, quick-witted opponent and pummeling him into the dirt with raw power, you know what that makes you? That makes you the bad guy. But if he's an ally, he's an ally who's just better than you, which is a really frustrating kind of ally to have. You know, because he's a roguish adventurer type, as a cat would be. So it's not like you have some mighty king where you go on missions for him, or some wise old sorceress who gives you prophecies and then you have to go see what's the deal with them. He's like you. If he allies with you, it's going to be to do stuff that you should be able to do but can't, which is frustrating and unfun. So I think this guy works best as a sort of rival rather than an antagonist per se. He too wants to steal the blue jewel, and he is the world's greatest thief or whatever, and you have to like track him down and persuade him that unless you get the blue jewel back, then all the lands will be covered in a second darkness, and then, you know, he's selfish and vain because he's a cat, so presumably then he wants something in return, etc., etc., etc. Unfortunately, the entry for this character in the Monster Manual 2 just kind of leaves what his motivations are vague. It says that he's not concerned with, like, good or evil. He's only interested in cat things. So what are cat things in the context of a black-clad adventurer lover type? Is it like Catman, where he's kind of, I'm talking about sort of modern versions of Catman, where he's kind of a vigilante protesting and avenging injustices committed against wildlife? Or is it like Catwoman, where he's, you know, a thief who steals things that have kind of cat themes, but then actually he's not so bad after all, and he can be redeemed with a good cuddling, and so on? Or what? Does he just want, like, fish? He's sneaking into the Fishmonger's Guild to steal only the best fish, and he just wants to take a nap and then attack some things. You know, maybe you can distract him with a laser pointer or a feather on a bit of string. Like, I wish that the book was a little clearer about what constitute the cat things that this character would be interested in. Although certainly my general distaste for suave international adventurer lover type NPCs, as opposed to PCs, would be seriously alleviated by having him be this dashing, cool guy, but then everything that he's concerned with is something completely stupid because he's only interested in cat things. And the challenge then would be like, oh, well, this guy's the world's greatest thief with all of his spells and abilities and summoning cats and whatnot, but we have to, you know, even though he's a super genius, his mind is so far beyond our petty mortal concerns that, you know, he just wants the good cat food on the crystal dish, and we have to figure out how to focus his weirdo cat mind on the mission that we want him to carry out, which could be a lot of fun. You know, we have to go and do a bunch of nice things for cats so that they'll vouch for us. That's a fun image, right? Of characters roaming the back alleys of their fantasy city, like doing small good deeds for cats in order to kind of grind rep with this weirdo. Okay, well, that's another monster that I've talked myself into liking, and that means that it's the end of this episode of Monster Man. In our next episode, we're going to take a look at two creatures of the natural world, the catfish, giant, and the cave cricket, on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.